China's economy springs back to life. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vishala Sripathma in for Victoria Craig. Good morning. Some impressive growth figures out of China today, with it reporting an 18.3% jump in gross domestic product between January and March compared with the same period in 2020. Although economists argue this is heavily skewed by the plunge in activity in the first quarter of last year when the pandemic began. Nevertheless, it is a recovery during a time when many economies around the world are struggling to get off the ground due to the virus. Earlier, I spoke to the BBC's Robin Brandt in Shanghai, who explained that growth was led by strong exports and people spending their money locally.
It's a substantial bounce back. It's a very impressive bounce back in terms of domestic travel, schools, people spending. It was pretty much back to something like normal from the end of summer, the beginning of autumn last year, and that has remained the case. What is interesting, though, is that the pace of acceleration of growth does appear to be easing off.
And why is that?
I mean, there is no doubt that the Chinese authorities, in the context of an authoritarian government, have been very successful in containing the spread of COVID-19 here. Turning on the tap in a good old-fashioned way in terms of supply-side economics was a big factor early on. A lot of debt-driven spending, getting construction projects going, getting people working, helped the economy to recover very, very quickly. I think the issue going forward is going to be concerns about that debt and also the extent to which that domestic consumption really is strong enough to carry the economy forward on its own. I mean, we had some export figures last week that showed very healthy growth for China's factories, but that's partly because the US is growing, partly because of the big stimulus plans there, and that is not sustainable in terms of changing the way this economy works here. The borders are closed here, so China's rich, China's middle class are spending their money, but when that changes, and of course it will change, and they go back to New York and London and Dubai, that will taper off.
And in terms of the vaccine rollout, that's been quite key for many major economies around the world. What's it been like in China?
Bluntly speaking, there's been far less of a need. The containment was successful and they are ramping up the inoculation program. Some 200 million people now have been inoculated, but it was slow to begin with. And that, frankly, was because China didn't see the need. Its borders are closed and COVID-19 has all but been eradicated from mainland China. But they remain super, super vigilant. It's just the use of domestic China vaccines at the moment. There are four of them. Some foreign ones will be on the way. And so what you're seeing anecdotally is a definite increase in the nudge. You know, I've seen it here in Shanghai, restaurants saying our staff are inoculated, trying to encourage people to come in. We're hearing about universities, businesses that may be going a bit further and trying to coerce people. But China is pretty much taking its time. That is because on the one hand, it frankly just didn't have the need.
Is that something that perhaps is going to change when they do open their borders?
Yeah, I mean, I think importing the virus is the thing they're most concerned about here. And there's much talk about the Beijing Winter Olympics in the winter of next year being the moment at which China might decide to open up. But for now, getting in is very, very difficult. It is increasing its inoculation. It's ramping up the scale, but it's doing it relatively slowly. But it wants to try and get 40% of its population done by this summer with a herd immunity still quite well into 2022. So, you know, 1.4 billion people here. Clearly, it takes time, but China started relatively slowly.
BBC's Robin Brandt in Shanghai. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A quick look at the market numbers here in London. The FTSE 100 has reached over 7,000 for the first time since the pandemic began, as restrictions ease here in the UK. The chief executive of Europe's largest tourism group, TUI, has suggested that people should be able to show evidence of either vaccination or a negative COVID test in order to travel internationally this summer. Frederik Jussen also hinted that the cost of testing needs to come down. The BBC's Theo Leggett reports.
Many airlines and tour operators have been struggling to stay afloat. TUI itself has been forced to borrow billions from the German government. But Mr. Jussen told the BBC he was optimistic that the holiday season this summer could be saved. He said his company expected to operate around three quarters of its normal schedule from July onwards. He suggested that some countries were likely to ask travellers for evidence of COVID vaccinations. But he added that for the moment, a negative test should be given equal weight to a vaccination certificate.
That was the BBC's Theo Leggett. Now, I've no idea if you have a hobby or a weekend pursuit, but how do you fancy drone racing? It's taking off, pardon the pun, and proving to be quite the money spinner, with the industry worth billions of dollars. Earlier, I caught up with Nicholas Holbowesky, founder of the Drone Racing League.
On each of these drones, there's a little camera on the front, and that camera is broadcasting a video feed of what it sees back to the pilot. So it's like they're sitting in the cockpit of the drone. And what that lets them do is navigate complex three-dimensional courses in high speed. It's because it's like they're sitting in the cockpit of the drone, even though they might be quite far away from it, controlling it with a controller. Each of the races are about a minute long. So right at the beginning, six drones pop up. They're flying at incredible speeds through these courses. On average, about half of them crash. So if you're watching any one race, you'll see about three drones explode when they miss a gate or take a turn too fast. And then the drone that finishes first is the winner.
Have you been competing recently?
Like all sports, we suffered quite a bit of disruption during 2020. I'm proud to say that we did two complete seasons of racing in 2020, one in the spring and then one in the fall. So we kept racing despite the complexities. And one of the reasons we were able to do that is because our sport sits on this sort of blurry line between the digital and the real.
So how are you doing in the league? How are you faring?
I am not a great pilot. The pilots that race in our league are the 12 best pilots in the world. Their skills are simply astounding. Anyone who learns to fly a drone may have the experience where you get it, and the first time you take it off, you fly right into a tree. The type of drones these pilots fly, which are called FPV or first-person view drones, are fully manual, meaning there's nothing helping you fly it. So it takes an even higher level of skill. And then you have them doing it in a competitive setting at incredibly high speeds through complex courses with an audience cheering at them under pressure. And the way they fly, it's simply incredible. I mean, their reflexes, their hand-eye coordination, it's something amazing.
That was Nicholas Holbowesky, founder of the Drone Racing League. In London, I'm Vishala Sripathma with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.